deal with two or three inaccuracies because it's important that we clean this up. So the ICT specialist that was referred to as the Bernard Krieger is not an IT specialist. He was part of the 2018 task team and from Borland College that was brought in by DHET to help to assist to sort out the TVET environment. And the TVET payments are not done on spreadsheets. So he's not an ICT specialist. The 14,000 students that are unpaid in the TVET environment, they were unpaid because NISFAS received the wrong progression rules. So in other words, they were ruled as not to have progressed. Since then, we have been contacted by various colleges. DHET has given us correct progression data, and those students have now been paid. The VUT issue, we have so far paid out 380 million rand to VUT. The next tranche that they will receive will be the end of the month. So we are on date with regards to payments to VUT. If there are issues, like they might have problems disbursing money further on to the students, we will be sending our people there to assist. But that we are, from this side, we are on target. The issue of Ms. Tanya Isaacs, yes, she was part of Ernst & Young, and they provided internal audit services to us. They were, in fact, the internal audit that raised the NOCLA finding for that triggered part of the reason why the administration was instituted. Prior to appointment, because we were concerned about a conflict of interest, we cleared the ethics thereof with the department, we cleared the ethics thereof with the Auditor General, as well as with the Minister, and no ethical conflict was found. So that's on that basis that she was therefore employed after all those ethical checks were done.
So she's what's her responsibility now?
She's the head of governance and risk, and also the forensic the forensic investigations will be falling under. I would just like to state the members on the figures that we've presented in the report. I would like to emphasize that these figures are audited figures. This is not NISFAS figures. These are audited figures. And prior to us presenting the figures to the Auditor General for validation, we went one step further to also get external company to check all our assumptions to make sure that we don't lie to ourselves or that we don't present a wrong picture of what has been going on. I want to deal with the issue of the annual performance report. Yes, it is the dismal picture. And the reason why it is as dismal as it is because the KPIs that we are reporting against were ill-designed and they are not smart. They are unauditable, they're irrelevant to the processes that NISFAS follow, and therefore NISFAS are scoring so low on that. Our remedial action on that was to get expertise from the Auditor General to help us to redesign the KPIs so that it can measure the processes that should be measured and that we can measure our performance properly. We are quite far down the line with that, and I would be very happy to share that with the Audit Committee. So the performance against it is dismal because it's totally...
I'll come to the audit committee.
So yes, all we can say, we apologize for very poorly constructed KPIs. We didn't construct it, but we take the hit on the chin, and we say we are fixing it. And so the next set that we're going to present are indeed going to be measuring what we are truly doing and measuring our performance. So with regards to the VBS, the question from the member, I stand by what I said. No money got exchanged, no money exchanged between NISFAS and VBS. Perhaps I should repeat what happened. The previous management issued a tender for a design of a NISFAS wallet for students. The two banks that won the tender was Standard Bank and VBS. Prior to me arriving, VBS was placed under curatorship and the then management cancelled that contract with VBS. The contract with Standard Bank was still live when I came in, and because of all the controversy around it, I engaged Standard Bank and I said I want to scrap the Standard Bank contract as well. So there was no money that I am aware of and that I checked with the CFO that exchanged hands, and neither were the students in any way exposed. If it had gone on, there could have been problems. But the VBS was cancelled before I arrived, and subsequent to my arrival, I also cancelled. In conjunction with the CEO of Standard Bank, I said to him, this thing was just too messy. I'm not prepared to continue with it, and we scrapped it. The issue of the audit committee, Chair, that is very interesting. The administrator was appointed to replace all management and governance of NSFAS and take control over all of that. At the time when I arrived, there was an audit committee that was in existence from the previous board. I could not see my way fit to work with the same people I no longer could consider to be independent, because those very same people asked for an administrator to be appointed, and then to continue with them to do the type of work and the honesty and the brutality and the frankness that was required, I did not see my way open to continue with these people, and therefore I wrote them letters to say that your services will no longer be required. There are further reasons as well. When we did, and I'm doing this in the sake of transparency, when we did our risk assessment, one of the key issues that came up was the issue of cybersecurity. And we all agreed that cybersecurity is a big problem. And none of them disclosed that they were sitting on a cybersecurity report. And therefore, I decided at that point to terminate their services. I agree that we should regularize. And one of the key things then going forward is to put in place the correct board oversight structure and the correct structure so that post-administration or as the administration starts to taper off, it must be regularized. And I'm saying this because I don't want to be accused of being not transparent. I want to deal with the big issues that
you
can...
You know, on the audit committee, maybe you misunderstood what I was saying. I was not advocating for the retention of those people, whoever they were. I'm advocating for the principle. You can't be everything at once. You can't be the board, the CEO, and the audit committee. You come in, you take out one, replace that immediately so that there must be a body that is there that is looking at the audit environment, the control environment, and everything. That's all what I'm saying. You had all the rights to get rid of whoever was there who was not doing their work. But what I'm raising is that you can't therefore take over the function because they don't belong to you.
I fully accept the advice, and I will make sure that we pay attention to that. On the issue of forensics and the shall we call it, the smallness of the amounts of people that we locked up, that is the first arrest that we've effected. If you look at the forensic report, you will see that just in the Western Cape alone, there are 514 instances that have been handed over to the Commercial Crime Unit. I met with them personally sometime this week, I think 2 days ago. I said to them that we are under pressure to report progress against the rooting out of corruption. That's number one. And that we are under pressure to get corrupt people out of the system, and therefore they need to expedite. They have promised to move faster, but they've also told me in very blunt terms that if they don't make sure that they do all the correct investigations, they're going to do more harm than anything. So we are caught in between that, but I'm quite willing to get the investigating brigadier to come and report to the Portfolio Committee on Progress. Now, I want to also just emphasize, the 514 we are talking about are only in the Western Cape. There are some of the other four forensic investigations that shows us that there are syndicates that are happening across the country. And in that respect, we have now secured the services of the SIU, and we brief them, because in many cases, we just don't have the powers to subpoena people. And they are now working on this. So we are caught in between this fire that we have to make sure that we follow process and that allow the SAPS and the judicial services to do their work. But we also under pressure from yourselves to make sure that we clean up the system and get the corrupt people out of the system as quickly as possible. The issue of disbursement, I think, is very important. So historically, when at the start of administration, there was a large amount of third-party agents that disbursed on behalf of NSFAS to students. We're talking about the Talimali, and by the way, in the sake again of transparency, Talimali was formed from ex-NSFAS officials. Fundi...
Was that?
Taramali was formed from ex-NSFAS officials I'm told, and we are investigating that too.
Okay.
Fundi was another agency that distributed on our behalf, and SPAX was another system. SPAX had a voucher system which directed students to particular merchants and to particular specials, if you put it, the booksellers and so on. Now, one of the first things that I discovered is that these merchants received a monopolistic position because, especially in the case of booksellers, you could only spend your book allowance at particular booksellers. So it was entrenched monopoly. That didn't gel with me, especially since I became aware that when people still have a credit with them, they force them to buy other things to make sure that they use all the money with them. And I can mention some examples like sunglasses and all sorts of funny things. And I keep on telling the DHET we must move away from this issue of book allowance. It's not book allowance, it's assistive learning devices which could be used by a tablet or a computer or software to download material. Books are out of fashion. If you go to other countries, people download their books, but that's a debate that we must have still. So first of all, we scrapped the voucher systems. Then we made cash disbursements to students. Secondly, because we were paying cash to students, we were forced to go on to some form of cash disbursement in that very short space of time. And that is when the NSFAS wallet was introduced. I want to repeat a statement I made earlier. Initially, we started with three colleges that indicated that they had no capacity to distribute to students. We have now 26. And of the 52 colleges, the 26 colleges that are on the NSFAS wallet are the most stable. The other 26 are really battling to pay their students, and that's why we have upheaval. So the fraud that's happening in the NSFAS environment, if you weigh the benefit of getting the money to the majority of students against some of the fraud that we're losing, it's still unacceptable, but it's a lot better than what it was. And if we then move next year, where we scrap the NSFAS wallet system and we move to direct disbursement, where we cut out completely all middle persons, where we pay directly from NSFAS through the NSFAS bank, which is our bank, to the student's bank account, which could be any bank account that qualifies, we will remove all of these middle people and all of the opportunities for fraud, and we will have the additional checks and balances that banks normally have when they run accounts. And that's quite far down the line. We are on our side actually ready. We are engaging the TVETs to get them to a state of readiness, but the big success factor would be is to encourage students to open up bank accounts. Because there's some reluctance, and I mean there's a whole host of reasons which you can go into. But once we get that right for the entire sector, we will remove all middlemen and all of these commercial interests that are benefiting from the back of the disbursement process. The quantification of what was lost and what is recoverable, yes, we agree with the Auditor General that this is the best possible estimate that we can put currently on the table. Because, Chair, every day we discover more fraud. Every day we discover more irregular expenditure. Every day we receive records from institutions where somebody forgot to send it on to NSFAS. The last point I'm going to address before I hand over to my colleagues, Ms. Makwatsa, the issue of us getting money in time to students, two things need to happen. First, you must be declared eligible by NSFAS. In other words, you must qualify for the criteria. And secondly, we must receive the registration data from your institution. Now, if we don't receive the registration data, the PFMA does not allow us to pay over any amount to that student because the student is, for all intents and purposes, not registered. However, having said that and being appreciative of the process at universities, we do make upfront allowances to universities to manage that process. And in that last year, we had paid over 4 billion rand in upfront payments. And this year, in 2020, we are going to have similar amounts set aside. But if the process is run properly, and if institutions could register off-site instead of waiting for one particular registration week, then we could probably find a way to get money more seamlessly through to students without having the upfront payment. But it's a transition period, and we will try our best. And we are very sympathetic. To the extent even that when we notice that students don't get their money from the institution, we actually do already pay into students' bank accounts. We tell students, please send us a bank account that we can get the money into your bank account so that at least you can alleviate hardship. But I've tried to cover the main points. There's a lot of points here that we need to uncover. And I'm actually quite happy that this committee is quite hard on us, because we cannot begin to become complacent. There is still a lot of work in this was required. Anybody that is naive to think that we have cracked this is still a long way. In 2019, we have so far paid in excess of 95% of all payments that were due to students, which is remarkable, and we are mopping up, but it should be 100%. And therefore, we will remain hard on ourselves, and we remain accountable to this. The issue of systems, somebody asked the issue of systems. The systems are not fit for purpose. The systems must be scrapped, and new systems must be brought in. But for now, the systems that are not fit for purposes are carrying us, and we are confident that it will carry us into 2020. But it can't carry us forever. So at some stage, there has to be a system redesign that's based on business design first. You must first define your business needs before you buy a system. In this case, the system was first bought, and then the business needs were determined. So those things need to be worked with, and we will be working with the CSIR. We've started discussions with them to help us with system design, and we will be getting experts on board to make sure that we don't make the same mistake. But I'll hand over to my colleagues if any one of them want to add. I hope I've covered the big issues, Chair. If I miss something that you think I should have covered, I'm quite happy to come back to them.
Well, the regular expenditure, did you cover it? You're coming to that.
I'm coming exactly to that.
Okay.
So thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. To add to what the administrators sketched on irregular expenditure, and if I followed the questions that were raised by the various honourable members, it's centred around the aspect of investigations, the aspect of recoverability, and the aspect of will it actually continue. Right. So those are three key aspects insofar as that's concerned. For information, all of these instances of irregular expenditure, Chairperson and Honourable Members, were identified in the last few months, from the time that the annual financial statements were submitted at the end of May up to the time it has now been finalised. In actual fact, even before submission of the May annual financial statements, we made a conscious decision, which we shared with the Auditor General, that we could have completed the annual financial statements with the information that we had at that stage and left it at that and included nothing else on irregular expenditure. As a management team with the administrator, we thought that would be irresponsible because of the significance of the items that we were uncovering, etc. So there was joint agreement that we could do that. But the fact of the matter is the amounts were only confirmed as irregular during that period. We have yet to actually do the investigations. We do make reference, for example, on the instances relative to NOCLA on page 165 of the annual report, that there are forensic investigations in process at the moment. The outcome of that will take its course and whether we are able to recover. For the remainder of items within the NOCLA bucket, we will, as a management team, still need to work through in terms of the National Treasury framework on irregular expenditure. Making the determination and reporting it in the annual financial statement is one thing, but then establishing recoverability, having the follow-on action steps, are very concrete things that the organization is in the process of doing. So that would touch on the investigation and the recoverability. On the aspect of will it continue, yes, it will continue on two things. On the one where disbursements were made in excess of contract amounts, until we get the contracts for the correct amount signed by the respective students, the amounts will remain irregular. So by way of example, if a contract was signed 2 years ago and it is for a 3 or a 4 year period, but the contract amount is the incorrect amount, even though we are paying what we should have paid that's been approved by the institution and our own system, it will remain irregular because the comparison is being made to the contract amount. So on that grouping, where it's disbursement in excess of contract amounts, it will continue. By way of example, the restated figure of last year was 211 million rand. The current year number for the year that we're reporting is 1 billion rand. So that's saying that those contracts were signed at a later stage in the previous financial year. What was irregular was 211 million. A full year impact on those same contracts is R1 billion. And if they all still endure for another full financial year, there will still be another billion on that grouping until we get the right signatures on the amount. And on the grouping of NOCLA, where I raised different types of incorrect payments, then on that grouping also, for payments that continue to be made on contracts that have been signed, those will continue to be irregular. A decision, if a harsh decision gets taken in collaboration with the minister and yourselves, Honorable Chairperson, and as a committee, that we stop payment on those accounts and take all of the consequences that go with the thing, yes, then that will immediately stop to zero. So in a nutshell, it will continue, but we will obviously minimize it to the extent that we possibly can. So hopefully that gives some clarity around investigation, recoverability, and will irregular expenditure continue?
Well, I'm still very unclear. I don't know about the members. On a regular, you see, the requirement is that you must investigate, you must recover.
Yes.
And they say you have not investigated, you are not recovering. And you say that it will continue. So what do we have because you are sketching a very gloomy picture that there is regular expenditure that is happening, we can do nothing about it. So it's beyond us, this thing. For as long as there is those students, because the issue here is that payment made in excess of contract amount. There's an amount you are paying over that. It says students have been funded who are doing courses that NSFAS does not fund. You see, you say it will continue like that. So I really don't understand what. Maybe if Randall can explain that, because you see, it has moved from 3 billion, it's now at 7.6 billion, and you say that it is likely to continue. Now I don't understand. Now, are we not supposed to be shocked by this thing that there is so much money that is? It's like the we're just explaining these things, irregular expenditure. I don't understand. Maybe you're too technical. Just put it in a language that we can understand. What is going to be done to stop this?
Okay, so let me try and give a bash at that, Honorable Chair. That is the headline, that we in this 1 year have found that the irregular expenditure has moved from somewhere about 300 million rand to 7.5 billion rand. That is how bad things have. That is what we've uncovered, and that was not uncovered previously. So we've gone back a few years and we said, if you look at all of the data from the prior years, whatever was declared in 2018 was not the correct amount. The correct amount is closer to 7.5 billion rand. So that is what we're saying, that through our digging through this data, irregular expenditure amounts to 7.5 billion rand. And that means that previous amounts must be restated. So let's go through some of them and then let's whittle down the 7.5 billion. The shifting of earmarked funds, which is in total just under 2 billion, that is a book entry that must be corrected. Okay, so it's not a loss. It means that the money was paid from a wrong account and no permission was sought for that. So we need to get permission to then move that money and say, give us condonement because this money was paid out from the wrong account. So that's 2 billion that we can correct. The disbursement in excess of contract amount, which is 1.2 billion. Now this is those ridiculous cases which I referred to earlier, where students were contracted for very low amounts, like 50 rand. but if the student had to be paid 100,000 rand by way of example. NSFAS then paid the 100,000 rand, which was the right amount, but the contract said 50 rand. And according to the PFM Act, that then constitutes irregular expenditure because you did not pay the contracted amount. Okay? Now that we can seek general condonement for, because it's clearly that you cannot continue with a 50 rand contract and pay a person the 100,000 that he or she needs. And like Mr. Prakash Mangre said, you could take a harsh decision and say, we're not going to pay you, because we're only going to pay you the 50 rand, but then you create chaos in the system, and students will then go hungry and all sorts of things. So there we will have to find a way to get general condonement to fix that and regularize it, because we can't continue year in and year after reporting against a thing which we know is wrong. The disbursement with regards to NOCRA, that's now the different kettle of fish. There we have instances where the wrong courses were funded. There we have instances where people were paid too much. There we have instances where the money went to the wrong institutions. Now, insofar where we can recover, we should recover. But it would be very difficult if you started funding a student to now in the middle of his or her degree to say to him, we funded you wrongly, we're going to stop funding you. And then that person must drop out of the system because of an administrative error by somebody in this first. And so there we will also have to regularize. And so what I'm saying is that this 7.5 billion rand, we will have to come to you, and our initial estimate that we probably won't be able to recover the order of a billion rand or so, which is an estimate. I must put that on the table. It's not a scientific figure. And then in the others, we have to come together and seek the necessary permission to regularize it, because it would be stupid of us to come next year again and report on the same irregular funding whilst there are whilst we all know that these are administrative errors that caused it. So I think unpacking it in that way, because it would not make sense for us to come with the same sheet next year saying this is the irregular expenditure. It would not make sense. So we need to find a way as policymakers, as government, to find a way to regularize this in one way or the other and move forward on a clean sheet. Because the future NSFAS post-administration cannot be saddled with this burden. I don't know whether I'm being too optimistic.
Yeah, at least you try to explain how it's going to be done. There's another 5.3 million in fees, which I think must be explained, and how are we going to recover that one?
Cheers for that one. Just to clarify also again, in line with what the administrator said, it was not paid to VBS, but rather paid to institutions within the private sector rather than investing it with the Corporation for Public Deposits, the CPD accounts. So spare cash or reserves were invested with entities in the private sector, and these are asset management fees incurred then on those investments. Those we'll have to we would have to go again and seek condonement for that amount, but again it was not paid over to VBS. If you don't mind, Chair,
Yeah, I think we'll want to get the details of that.
We can certainly provide it.
5.3 million as fees.
Yeah,
it means the figure is quite higher, the one that you invested.
Sure, I think we can certainly provide it in subsequent engagements. I have three other points, and I'll try to be brief if you want. So the SEM, I unfortunately don't have the full context, so I'll pay you the question justice. There were two issues raised in 17-18 audit findings, and I think the assertion was that NSFAS hasn't done anything about it. The one issue related to local content. At the time, we disagreed with the AG, but we engaged with DTI on this, and internal SEM processes has been updated subsequently. You will note on slide 22 that there are no material SEM findings in the current year. The other issue related to, if I remember correctly, uncompetitive bidding processes as a result of multiple RFQs as opposed to a tender process. Processes have been improved within the SEM space, and no repeat audit findings occurred in the current financial year. There was a question, Chair, on DBE, or the Department of Basic Education. So the DBE runs the Funza Lushaka Bursary Fund. That's administered by NSFAS. So NSFAS administers that on their behalf, and we do charge them an admin fee. So that's where the DBE funds comes from. There's also a question on recoveries. The recoveries are made on loans issued pre-2018. We are also recovering on those ones. In the previous financial year, we recovered 628 million of the target or KBI of 641. So it was an achievement of 98% of the target. We obviously didn't meet, and therefore is not recorded as an achieved KPI. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. There were two members, three, I think, who asked to do follow-ups. It was Honorable Modada and Mananiso and Honorable Yabu. But I see Honorable Gates and Ngobo also wants to do so. Let's give the five of you. Briefly, just...
Yeah, Chair. The first thing for me is that I thought the administrator would have commented on the recommendation about the overhauling of NSFAS. I would like to really, because that's a recommendation I'm going to put on the table. The second thing, what I did not get is the TVET sector. You did mention that those 26 institutions that were on the e-wallet, were doing better than those that were not. But to also just to pick up those that were not, the question I was asking is there any irregular expenditure in terms of the amount that you transferred to them? Do they utilize it for the right reasons? And if not, you know, how much was not and what were the consequences thereof? And I think my question around how many, you're saying 95% of the students, 95% you've dispersed to the students. How many to date on the 11th month of the year have not gotten the allowances at all? That's the question I was asking. Then lastly, there's a very massive dropout rate if you look at your annual report on 161 of NSFAS-funded students vis-a-vis those that have dropped out. It's about 400,000, but only 53,000 of them could be able to pay back their loans. So I just wanted to check, have you examined and investigated what the cause of the high dropout rate is for NSFAS-funded students, as well as those that have graduated, about 600,000 of them, but only 112,000 of them can be able to pay back
their funding. Okay, thank you very much.
Stop there.
Sure,
thanks.
Honorable Gates, just like that,
Mananiso,
and then...
Just an explanation, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Explanation on book allowance, because I'm hearing that I think there was a process of voucher for book allowance, right? And we want to check how feasible it will be, because I think there's a strong feeling from this committee that suggests that the book allowance should primarily be for books. I want to check with the current way of doing things of dispersing funds to students through their bank accounts, how will that curb the students not to use that money for other things too? You have went to institutions, and I'm sorry, just to withdraw the fellow, right? Yeah, I think the gentleman. I'm told that the administrator have responded that the guy is just there employed, is not doing critical work of, but that is not true. You know, that is not true.
Oh, you're not around.
No, I was just there on the door because I wanted to check if they can be honest if in my absence. But seemingly it's like I was correct, because it looks like the explanation given suggests that the gentleman is just a general staff. While we know very well that on the terms of reference, I mean the Yeah, in terms of reference, there was a provision that they must have a specialist. I'm not saying the gentleman must be removed or what must. I'm just saying, is there a specialist in that regard? Because there can't be terms of reference without a need to have that particular person. We want to check if you are going to have that person. Is he credible enough? Is he equipped enough to unleash responsibilities of that magnitude? That is what I want to check. Three, we want to check which company or which personnel are in charge of these ICT systems or these IT companies that we are using. Because we really need to understand what are they really doing there. At this 11th hour, the 11th month, we're still saying 95 and we want to, you know, beautify it as if, you know, 95, because we spoke about passing. 95% seem to be meritoriously flamboyant like that. So forgetting that 95% of the total number of funded students, it leaves that 5% with a very huge number of students who are compromised in the process.
Okay.
But however, Chair, lastly.
Remember, we still have a follow-up with them.
Correct. Lastly. And they said they go to campuses, right, whenever there are issues. I can tell you now, Chair, that there hasn't been enough effort from NSFAS to resolve issues of students. They went to many institutions that I can mention, right? When they get there, they get furnished with problems. They get furnished with issues of students. Then NSFAS respond to say, there has been some missing documents here and there. Please resend or reapply, right? That happened somewhere in February, March. Even today, none of those students are being assisted. We want to check the effectiveness of going to campuses, and at a later stage, nothing happens.
Okay. Honourable Mananis.
All right. Thank you, Chair. At least we know now why the lady is sick today when we check the key performance indicators. The person was supposed to deliberate on them. Why is she sick? But mine is on the issue of, firstly, I want to say, on page 46, perhaps next time we need to get specific details in terms of the project manager's qualifications and other specialists that are indicated there, so that we are able to play our oversight role if these particular people are able to do their work as supposed to. However, mine is an addition with regards to what Kiese has asked about ICT, but I just want to check how much is the IT contract costing NSFAS. And then the other thing is that there's an indication on the annual report with regards to finances that gratuity money was paid for performance and what. So with regards to the report, there was nothing that was performed. So why did people get paid while there's nothing that has been done? The other issue is...
Lastly, the last one.
Okay, Chairperson, I think I've got only two that are critical. You just indicated that you are anticipating next time to be not speaking about irregular expenditures and so on. So I want to check, can you give us a time frame in terms of when are you going to fill those critical positions to ensure that next time you change the narrative of this particular report.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, it's a different thing from what was raised by the Honourable Nodata. Honourable Nodata wants to make a proposal. I am asking a question. The question was directed to the administrator. I would honestly like to hear him answering that question very honestly. The question was, doesn't in his view think that it would be the best thing to do to go for a complete overhaul? If the question is putting him in an awkward position as an administrator, I am prepared to rephrase the question.
Okay.
Lastly, Honorable Yabo.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to ask, I think, just two questions maximum. And they are related to the recent strike by NSFAS employees caught the attention of media and some of the grievances that were raised, apart from the issues related to the suspensions and the refusal of the employer to pay performance bonuses, is the fact that they raise issues around your advisory committee. I would want to know who is that advisory committee and how is it composed? And the full demographic of that advisory committee. And some of the grievances relate to the fact that the advisory committee seems to be getting a PEX that nullify the assertion that there's no money to pay the performance bonuses. They drive around in the plush cars paid for by NSFAS, etc., etc. So we want to dispel, if there are rumors, dispel them for us. If there's fact there, tell us the truth. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair, remember that point.
Honorable, not data, please.
No, Chair, just quickly. If you remember, one of the points that I wanted to ask is NSFAS going to appoint or allocate regional employees during the registration period in 2020? That's the question I wanted to ask.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Okay, so does NSFAS see it overall? I'm sorry if it seems...
Maybe okay. Start with Honorable Gates' question about the gentleman who's working on the Excel spreadsheet.
Okay, okay. Essentially, yeah, let me just repeat.
You are not around, yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Bernard Krieger was not appointed by the administrator. He was part of the 2018 task team appointed by DHET to look at the restructuring of TVET colleges. So I found him there. He's not an ICT specialist. He's a TVET specialist. He's very qualified in TVET matters. He's not qualified in ICT matters, as you suggest. But he's also not running things on an ICT. The reason why I'm saying that is because I don't want to make him sound like he's just a general person walking around there. He's a TVET. He comes from Boran College. The issue of the overall, the answer is yes. The NSFAS models that were implemented up till now has failed. And the only reason why we have success or reasonable success is because the place is under administration. If you are going to impose the same model onto NSFAS, my personal belief is that you will have an administrator again in 2 years' time, or the place where it will be shut down. So a complete reimagination of NSFAS is required, and a reimagination of its operating model, and a reimagination of its governance structure. That is my personal belief, and I'm quite happy to put that on the table. The list of let me just make sure I follow. The list of advisors, so if you read the terms of reference of the administrator, the administrator is allowed to appoint a team of advisors to advise him on matters that he needs attention. And that would include ICT, finance, HR, and a whole host of that. So the demographic distribution and the names and the qualifications of those advisors, I would gladly make available to the committee. Because a number of names were suggested to me at that time by Minister Naledi Pandor, and I contacted everybody that she advised, and we had to make a choice about availability and experts. And unfortunately, it is so, and you can look at the greatness, that most of the people were people that were already in retirement, because not many people that had a permanent job was willing to give up their job to serve as an advisor. But that is now, I'm not trying to duck the question, we make that full list available. We also make a full list of the conditions under which they employed available, because it is nonsense that we drive around in plush cars. We have followed all the procurement rules, and we have cleared that with DHET for any of our subsistence whilst we are in Cape Town. Because I come from Pretoria, and I was asked to come and live in Cape Town, and I could either stay for a whole year on a hotel, or I said to myself, if I get an apartment, I will save the institute DHET money, and I can look after myself. So we can, and for the sake of transparency, we'll make all of that available so that could be put to bed once and for all, that we are living on perks.
In fact, I should even argue for me to be away from home is a strain on my family. The question of the ICT specialist, we do have an ICT specialist, and I will include his credentials as well with a list of advisors that I'm going to provide to the portfolio committee. The issue of the NISFAS payback, now that is quite interesting because I'm quite surprised that we get the amount of payback that we do, because many of these students that are on the loan scheme are actually Fees Must Fall veterans. And they always argue that they fought for free education, but they must pay back. But the payback means that some of these veterans actually do want to contribute to a better society. Now, as my colleague Shay has pointed out, the repayment terms are very generous. It's a low interest rate. You can only pay a year after you graduated. And you only can start paying when you earn more than 30,000 rand a year. Now, we are aware that there are people that are outside of the category that should be paying, and we are pursuing them. So we have, through the government personal system, we found people, and we are signing agreements with big companies to actually deduct that money. But it is an issue of, whether people have reached the right threshold. And perhaps what we will do, for the sake of transparency, we'll give you a full report on the repayment statistics and how it goes. But it is going down as we speak. It's not increasing as we would hope. The issue of, I'll ask my colleague to give her the difficult one, why did we pay the 2 billion rand gratuity whilst people were not performing? That's exactly the reason why the strike, let me take it rather, that's the reason why I refuse to accede to the demand of 12,500 performance payments to all staff. Because I was saying that the institution is under administration, we are investigating fraud, there is no basis of performance. And that strike went on for 4 weeks, and besides the other issues that were on the table about us absorbing 41 people, which I didn't have budget for. The 2 million rand that we paid that was a gratuitous payment to say that we understand that some of you, this is the gains that we had under the administration is not just the administrator and his team. Some of these people actually did work day and night to help and assist us. So it was a compromise. The demand was in excess probably of 8 to 10 million rand, and we said there's 2 million rand to show that we are thankful and to break the strike also, to be very frank with you. Because the strike is also at a difficult time where we have to assess eligibility of students. So yes, if I had my way, I would have paid zero and phased down the strike for another week or two, but that would, of course, unnecessary disruption in the system, and I think the 2 million rand was a small price to pay for that. So it is one of those pragmatic decisions that we had to make. So I didn't want to put my colleague under stress to talk about the 2 million. The loss, I think that's a very important question. The regular expenditure, I'll ask my colleague Mafuleka to talk about those colleges that are not on the wallet system. Now, we do have accusations that some of these colleges use this money for cash flow purposes. We do have a record, and I think that's very important information that we are going to provide the portfolio committee. We are going to provide the portfolio committee with the payments to each institution, the schedule of payment of each institution, how many students are funded, how many students are not funded, for whatever reasons they are not funded, so that you can have a complete picture per institution. My last recollection is that by far, in the university environment, we by far fund most of the students. The ones that are still outstanding are those ones that have not signed the agreements. They either left the college or they refused to sign, or I don't know what the reason is. And then the 14,000 of the TVET colleges which we have funded yesterday, that was a progression problem that we had with data. But I would like Mafuleka just to talk about just the regional presence. Yes, we are planning a strong outreach. Our people will be available in the regions for the 2020 rolling, and especially for the TVET walk-ins that we expect in 2020. Okay, so we will have people at these colleges because it can become chaotic very quickly, where you have hundreds, thousands of students queuing, wanting to register for NISFAS, wanting to register at the university, and wanting to get paid at the same time. So we will be deploying our people like we did last year, But it is at a cost, you know. So we have to, because we don't have regional offices, and our regional office is going to be part of the NISFAS future. That will all be part of the future NISFAS design. So.
Thank you, Administrator, and thanks to everyone. We have about 1.7 students, 1,700 students that are funded and not paid, and the reason for that is that we have to block those students due to suspicious activity that we're talking about. So as soon as we're resolving the issues of their cell phone number changes, then we start making payments to those students. There are some students that colleges have claimed for where their funding decisions have not yet been concluded, and those are the ones that then we take up during the MOPA process. But everyone who's funded on our system has been paying consistently every month when we're making the payments. With regards, I think there was another question that was raised around the 2020 plans and the funding decisions that we want to make by the 15th of January. We think it's possible to make those funding decisions by the 15th of January, especially for continuing students, because we'll be opening up our system from the 14th of December for universities to give us the exam results for the students in order for us to make funding decisions. I've already been in contact with the department around the TVET results, because TVET operates on a national examination system, so the results for TVET we get directly from the department. The department has confirmed to us that by the 11th of January latest, they will be able to give us the funding, the progression requirements for students in the TVET sector, and that gives us enough time by the 15th of January to make the funding decisions for returning students. We also have a startup plan that we're doing for the working process, and I think one of the biggest risks that we'll have for next year, especially around the college sector, is the fact that we're having a walk-in application season in January, and we literally only have 3 weeks to make sure that students have applied, and also to make sure that funding decisions for those students have been made in order for us to make the payment by the first week of February through the banking system. So we are really working on a tight deadline and a tight plan to make sure that we achieve all of these milestones that we need to get in order for us to make that first payment for the students by the beginning of February. Around the colleges that are paying for themselves, part of the project that we have had instances, and I can make an example of one college where we had to take over when we discovered that the college was not paying the money to the students and they were actually using it for other instances. We took those institutions and we put them onto the wallet. Right now, we don't have the capability to audit or those institutions that are dispersing on their behalf to ensure if they are indeed making those payments to the students, and none of those findings. So we don't have that as part of our irregular expenditure because we don't have the capacity to audit them. But part of the plan is to make sure that we move those risky institutions into the banking system so that we are the ones that disperses on their behalf, therefore we'll have enough control of knowing when the student has been paid.
Okay. There is a lot to talk about. I think the responses were there.
Book allowance. Book allowance.
Book allowance. So the issue of the book allowance will be contained in the new rules and guidelines that will be released by DHET. And as soon as the minister signed off on that, then that will be not canvas, it will be workshop with the students, it will be workshop with the DVCs, and our people will then go out and train the people throughout the country. The issue of the book allowance, I don't know whether Dr. Parker wants to go beyond what I'm saying, but at the moment I can't talk because the minister has not signed off on it yet. Okay.
No, it's fine. We will have an opportunity to engage with that. If you say something is an allowance for books, it must be for books. You see, that's the point that we are raising. If you say, I'm giving you money to buy books, go and buy books. Ensure that you have bought a book. If you want to give money as pocket money, say that we're giving you pocket money for out-of-pocket expenses. Whatever you want to buy, go and buy it. So that we understand what are you funding there in the system, because we want to hold you accountable for that. I think we should be done. Just in summary, we agree that we are going to have a follow-up session. I don't think we can fit that in the remaining 3 weeks. We will have to do it next year when we come back. We will do it in your offices because your offices are here in Cape Town. So we'll just drive to your offices and then so that you can show us around what's happening there and then have that meeting. hopefully it's going to be for a day, and get to understand exactly what's happening there, what are the backlogs, whether we're on the right track and so forth. So that will be done. The second thing is that I think that as a committee, there's unanimity in the committee that there must be some kind of an overhaul of NSFAS, of the systems, governance processes and all of that, the disbursement and so that things must be different from how they were, because we can't afford to continue to have experience these problems. And so it does look like it is the minister who's supposed to make that call. So as a portfolio committee, we will be issuing that call to the minister to say, the minister, we urge you to appoint this committee, the task team, the committee of inquiry, the committee of inquiry, whatever, so that it can get to work and look at this. There's also, last week at the colloquium, there was also issues raised about what happened to the recommendations of the commission that was set up the last time. And there wasn't, a response that is satisfactory. So part of this process will also have to look into that. The recommendations, what happened to those recommendations and so forth. But I think what keeps on coming is the issue of infrastructure. I don't know who you have appointed, but from the briefing that we got yesterday from the Auditor General, when they tested your IT system, ICT system, it does appear that there are some weaknesses, a lot of weaknesses. And it's an area that I think you must tighten on. There are questions raised, for instance, by Honorable Manani, so how much are you paying on the ICT contract? Who's working on that? I think we'll get feedback from you on that. Two areas that worries me a lot is on the achieving two of the 16 predetermined objectives. I think it's unacceptable. It doesn't matter whether how they were smart or not smart. At the end of the day, how these are set, they are set by the department, they are sent to Parliament, approved through the APP, and we expect that you must perform against those predetermined objectives. Now, achieving two is such a dismal performance. I don't know whether we have to go back to those people who set those targets and the indicators and make them to account. But you may find that they are out of the system. So that worries me a lot. The second issue is on the irregular expenditure. I think we need to get the details of this irregular expenditure. And how the entity will attend to this irregular expenditure. It's alarming, it's increasing. So we need to have a conversation on what are the details, what caused this, what amount is involved, how are we going to stop this irregular expenditure, in writing, in detail, and I think that we must develop an action plan as part of responding to the issues raised by the AG to deal with this issue of irregular expenditure. But otherwise, we've had a very good, robust, as always, engagement. We are going to visit your offices next day in the new year, and to follow up the discussion. So the information that you've promised to send to us, please send that information in the next 7 days to the committee secretary. He will give it to the members. Otherwise, thank you very much. Oh, there's a... you know, the reason why I'm saying that we need to have a follow-up, when you look at the notes produced by the Auditor General, there are issues of the status of internal control. They go effective leadership, policies not approved, oversight responsibility. They raise issues. The organizational structure has not yet been approved. So there are quite a number of issues that pertains to the management of the institution, of the entity, which today we didn't have sufficient time to go through, but hopefully when we meet, we can go through those issues. Otherwise, honorable members, thank you very much. The House has already commenced, so...